All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
Welcome to Double Tap, Audio Boom's official gaming podcast. I'm Alice Taplin, and this week I'm joined by Ben Ridley, co-host of the Pixel podcast, to talk about the latest and final instalment in the 2.5D side-scrolling spin-off series, Assassin's Creed Chronicles. Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia follows Nikolai Orlov in the aftermath of the October Revolution, as he completes one last mission for the Assassin's Order. He's also joined by Princess Anastasia, whom he saves from a massacre by the Bolsheviks.
Until you have experienced the thirst for vengeance, you cannot know the rage it fuels.
Until you have found a cause worth fighting for.
Russia is a good game. I think it's following the same sort of thing in the Chronicles series. It's following the same sort of style and everything else. And I reckon that it's a good iteration. It's got its problems, got its faults. People sometimes not liking the fact that maybe the story isn't as depth as it should be. But I mean, you're not going to really get that full depth unless you are playing a blockbuster Assassin's Creed game. So I mean, for the type of title it is, you kind of get what you pay for.
One thing I have seen though about what people have been saying, especially about the other two as well as this one, is that It feels like every time you're playing a new game, you're just kind of playing the same one, but just like with slightly different graphics or maybe one or two new mechanics. But then as well, people have kind of said similar things about the main Assassin's Creed series.
A lot of people are complaining that Assassin's Creed isn't sort of changing enough, that they are bringing out lots of games very frequently. I mean, there's been loads of Assassin's Creeds out over the many years. So, that's a kind of a bit of an issue maybe with, Ubisoft generally and how they're viewing the franchise rather than the Chronicles series.
And I think as well, because I know that the Chronicles ones were outsourced to a different kind of developing...
Yeah, it's Climax Studios that make it.
But I just thought that maybe they could have, instead of focusing sort of time to get people to develop these other games, they could have maybe focused on what they can do to improve the main series instead.
I honestly do feel that there isn't a mass call for the Chronicle series generally. I mean, to a lot of people, it's probably not even that well known for people that maybe aren't sort of truly in, the gaming circle. And the time and money that could have been spent on another studio, could have been worked on improving the franchise and getting the franchise sort of moving forward and sort of maybe combating some of the complaints that there is in the main franchise.
But considering the fact that the Chronicles ones didn't fall, I mean, they got kind of mixed to bad reviews, I would say. Do you think that they'll really bother with spin-offs to begin with? Like, this could be the start of, more, or whether, it's fallen flat enough that they won't really bother with it in the future?
I think that this may be the last, at least for a while. I think that maybe it wasn't quite as successful as they were hoping. I mean, it's not the first time they've done something sort of a little bit off the main sort of franchise beam. I mean, they've done a game for, for the PS Vita before, which has just been only for the Vita and not really for anything much else. So, I mean, those aspects kind of work in their own way, but maybe something that is available on the main platforms just as well as the main game is, I don't know really what the appeal is and maybe how worthwhile it is for them to continue it. Because, I mean, me personally, I mean, if I was wanting to get my Assassin's Creed fixed and let's say I had a PS4, why would I really want to play something that's sort of like similar to the main franchise but not as fully developed as maybe the full game is?
Before Fallout 4, for example, came out, they had the Fallout
mini game
Shelter.
Yeah,
and whether or not, whatever your opinion is on how good or bad that was, like, it was on a different platform and it was something
exactly.
It was almost like a small thing to keep people interested before the main game.
Yeah.
Whereas these ones they've created as almost games in themselves, but like you said, if you have the main ones, why would you even really bother with these ones?
Nikolai, how long has it been?
You have worked for me.
Always the charmer. But I'm glad it is you they sent. I have a dangerous assignment. Our informants reported that the Imperial family may have in their possession an old and very special box. It may be a piece of Eden.
The Tsar's family is in Yekaterinburg, under guard.
Just the local militia, townsfolk under the command of a commissar. Still, keep your senses sharp, Nikolai. If this box is what we think it is, the Templars are no doubt looking for it too.
I've beaten them before.
I think they kind of missed a market and missed a point with Chronicles and the way they sort of targeted it and released it. I mean, you know, like PS4, Xbox One, PC, these are, especially the PC, I mean, all right, there are some indie games and things like that. But I mean, this is a place that if you've invested a decent amount of money, want to play on your PC, and you're targeting the PC gamers, then you're really not going to do that well with something that's more of a side-scrolling, you know, computer game. It goes back to the depth thing. I mean, it's like, oh, it's Russia, let's make it look really good. But if we took all of that out, you know, is there still a sort of like Russian thematic based story? Is there actually a point to it if you take all the sort of artsy style out of it? And it seems that that isn't the case, which is a little bit disappointing, like especially something that, you know, is on the major consoles.
Yeah. And I think as well, like one thing that Assassin's Creed Chronicles has done well as a series is the art. But I don't think, you know, that isn't clearly that isn't enough to, you know, withstand the whole game. You need something a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. If, you know, if I was interested in Assassin's Creed art, I'd probably buy an Assassin's Creed poster or, you know, some artwork that put on my wall. I wouldn't pay for a game to sit through and play just to watch some art. I mean, yeah, the main game follows Nikolai Orlov, and you've got...
They did Anastasia's character, I think, better than they did Nikolai's, but I still, as I said, the other games in the series, the characters, I just think, felt a bit flat.
You know, stories and side-scrolling creators don't always pair together very well. I mean, if you look at the success of something, which I would say is probably one of the more successful side-scrolling games like Little Big Planet, the success of that was more down to the fact that the users could obviously interact and create those levels. And the stories were fun, you know, just a little bit of fun, a little bit of an adventure. Oh, you know, this is the issue. Almost like, you know, your Mario games, this is the issue. This person needs saving, you know, to stop the planet from, you know, being taken over or the baddie from winning. Let's go and do that. And it's not a lot of depth into it because it doesn't need a lot of depth. And I think this sort of game is almost trying to be something, but then the way it's designed is limiting it from actually fulfilling what it's trying to create.
You cannot know the rage it fuels.
Until you have found a cause worth fighting for. I cannot know what you will sacrifice for it.
And now, here's Jamie with the gaming news.
Following on from today's theme, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot said no more Assassin's Creed mainline games will be released this year to give Ubisoft the time to take advantage of all new technologies. They also signalled that the Assassin's Creed series is not now going to be permanently moving to a biannual release schedule, and instead it'll be evaluated on a release-by-release basis. In other big series announcements, Activision have said that a new Call of Duty game will launch this year. The game is going to be developed by Infinity Ward, who made the Modern Warfare series. The new Call of Duty has been described by Activision as innovative, but there's not been any more concrete details about the game released. It's going to be the studio's first new game since 2013's Call of Duty Ghosts. And Kanye West has released a trailer for his video game Only One, which is a tribute to his late mother. The video released on Tidal Stream sees a woman with a majestic angel wings ascending into the clouds. It's safe to assume that this is probably his mother, Donda West, who died in 2007. The game's title comes from West's 2014 single Only One, which is about a fictional conversation that he imagined his mother might have had with his daughter, North. And that's this week's gaming news.
In episode 6, I spoke to Tanya DePass about the LGBT gaming event GamerX and the importance of having a safe space for queer gamers. But this convention isn't the only thing in the picture when it comes to sexuality and gaming. Midboss, who run GamerX, have a number of other projects, including their own game, Read Only Memories, and documentary Gaming in Colour. I managed to have a chat with their CEO, Matt Conn, about these various projects and what he calls the queer gaming renaissance. He started off by telling me how Midboss got started.
Whenever I would go to a gay event, it was really hard for me to find community. And whenever I'd go to these nerdy kind of gamer events, it was really also hard to really be open about my gayness or you know, just kind of be my true self. And so I started organizing these meetups for LGBT gamers. And the more that they grew and grew and grew and more people came and said how much it meant to them, the more I realized that there was something here that people wanted, and you know, there's a community here that it would be really cool to, you know, have an event for them. And kind of from that, all these other opportunities of creating content in the gaming world have all kind of risen from that.
And your Kickstarter for GamerX surpassed its target by quite a bit, didn't it? Why do you think that is?
Prior to us kind of launching the GamerX Kickstarter, there hadn't really been things, whether that be like Gamergate or stuff like Anita Sarkeesian, things like that, hadn't really been as big in the conversation. And I think that it just kind of struck the right chord at the right time. It made a lot of people upset. And I think that in part that helped kind of boost the profile for other gay geeks out there that have never, or at least in the beginning, were trying to kind of create this space for originally. So, you know, we're fine with when kind of the mainstream makes fun of it, because it still gets to the people that need to see it.
It's interesting because there still seems to be this kind of stereotype of games being like a masculine thing for boys, and people then seem to be surprised when gamers don't fit into this stereotype, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it just comes down to marketing and advertising. I think that, you know, you look at the way that video games were advertised from the 80s until, you know, really up until now, where they market it as a toy, and it's a toy for boys.
Dear PlayStation, I've been playing Uncharted 2 Among Thieves, but my girlfriend won't stop watching because she thinks it's a movie.
This is pretty common, Jason. I mean, just look at this game.
You know, you got Nathan Drake's epic gunfights,
impossible escape scenes, and a plotline filled with betrayal. Give her an hour or so, she'll know it's a video game.
I spoke at the children are about nine or 10 years old, and Super Mario Sunshine was probably coming out when they were a kid. I mean, when they were born. And it's so kind of interesting, like, they're playing, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's, and they're playing, you know, Minecraft. It's a totally different world. And a girl raised her hand, and she's like, oh, you know, can I enter into the video game industry? Like, I want to be a video game person. And she, you know, had already internalized, it's like, well, it's not really made for me. And she was like, is that weird? She basically was asking me, is it weird that I want to do video games? And I was like, no, like, awesome, great. Like, bring whatever you find super fascinating. If you want to make a video game about it, awesome. There's nothing stopping you. And the fact that they've already kind of internalized that at that young age, in the same way for like queer people and people of color, when you don't see anyone that's like you in the industry, when all the advertising is subliminally being like, well, you're not really the audience. I think that it does tell people, like, gives them a certain message that, like, this isn't really made for them.
Mm. And tell us about the game that you made.
Sure. So Read Only Memories is a cyberpunk adventure game. It's very much in the style of early 90s point-and-click adventure style games. And we wanted to create an adventure that really features a lot of topics that maybe don't get too discussed in mainstream video game culture without it being a game that is specifically about that. So we wanted to create, you know, a story that talks about, you know, this new city in Neo San Francisco, and you're exploring this murder mystery, and there's intrigue, and there's, like, you know, robot stuff, and it's a fun sci-fi-ish Blade Runner-y type adventure, but we talk about gender identity and sexuality and kind of where we see potentially human rights things moving over the next 45, 50 years. And, you know, it's something where, you know, we're probably going to be way off, but, like, I've always enjoyed science fiction because it's a good way of kind of talking about futurology and where we're going to be moving as a culture. And a lot of, you know, our observations about the world and culture and where we see San Francisco going and gender and sexuality, like, that's all kind of mixed together, and like all of the team's kind of views all mixed together, and what I think is an interesting kind of dialogue about all of that stuff.
Neo San Francisco, 2064 AD. The world is on the cusp of a new form of intelligence, and only you are capable of uncovering the truth behind it all.
Do you think that there is a danger of, if a game has LGBT characters in it, that it would just be brushed off as, oh, well, that's a gay game for gay people and I can't play it because I'm not gay?
Yes, absolutely. This actually happened today.
Okay.
I was looking on the subreddit for Cyberpunk, and apparently 4chan made a chart of, like, here's the ultimate list of all the Cyberpunk games. And it's like everything from Shadowrun to Perfect Dark to, and it's like, here's all these games coming out, you know, like Valhalla and System Shock 3. So it's like, here's all the games you could play. Here's the ones coming out. And Read Only Memories wasn't on there. And there's a bunch of other games that weren't on there. But apparently, like, someone brought up, like, you know, why wasn't Read Only Memories on there? And they were like, oh, well, that's disqualified because it's all about gay shit. And the fact that, like, that is a thought process. It's sad because we wanted to make something that could hopefully kind of cross aisles a little bit, which, you know, is a weird political thing to think about. But, like, we wanted to make something where if you aren't LGBT or you don't care about, like, these issues, like, maybe you're not, like, a hater, so to say, but you have no interest, you know, either way, because you're not gay, you don't know anyone that's close to you that's gay or trans, and you don't care. Wanted to make something that hopefully would be welcoming and exciting for you. And it just sucks when people are like, they're automatically like, oh, well, it's a gay thing. Like, tune out. You know, it's not like a gay porn game or something. Like, it's like a murder mystery and stuff. And so I hope that people can kind of come at that, you know, with that kind of open mind.
Mm.
Because, you know, it's not going to turn them gay or anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it hasn't been lab tested.
That's the fear, though, isn't it, from some people? If they watch anything to do with gay people, then suddenly that makes them gay, which is ridiculous. Can you tell us about the documentary you're doing as well?
Yeah, it's called Gaming in Color. It came out last year on Steam and at a bunch of other different platforms, and it is a documentary kind of about why we do what we do. When we first started doing GamerX, a lot of people would just come up to us or ask on the internet or write things, maybe not as friendly, but, you know, be like, I don't understand why you need this. Why is this important? There's people who would be like, well, you guys are gay and you're bad because you're gay and whatever. But then you'd have these well-intentioned straight people who are just like, well, I just don't understand. Like, you're just creating your own, you know, ghetto, and you're segregating yourself, and this isn't the way that you create inclusion. And, you know, I think that those people were coming from a good place, but it was very wearing to have to kind of sit down with each person and be like, listen, here's I can't just tell you one sentence and be like, here's why we do it. And so we wanted to create this movie so that way when people are like, I don't get it, at least now we can be like, here's why we do it. And it's tough because, you know, like, the people who we think would actually get the most out of watching this and would understand why we do those things would probably never watch it in their life. But I still thought it was important that we make it because I felt like queer people in gaming is like, it is sort of a story that hasn't been as prevalent as women in gaming lately. And I think that the queer folk in gaming is still like a huge movement over the last 5 years in terms of queer developers and trans developers and gay folk. And we're seeing so many different kind of queer mediums and stuff like Robert Yang's games. And it's been really cool seeing these things kind of happen. And it would make me sad if, like, I want to see more stuff like this. Like, I only have one perspective on it, and I think there's so many cool, interesting things going on. Like, we're almost basically in, like, a queer gaming renaissance, and I would love to see more kind of stuff about it. But we wanted to create this film, Gaming in Color, to really kind of set, like, a baseline of, like, here's why what we're doing is why we feel it's important.
And that's everything for this week. Do check out the Pixel podcast from Abrupt Audio on Audioboom. Beware, that's spelt PIX3L. And if you'd like to know more about Midboss and what they do, head on over to midboss.com. Join me next week, where I'll be celebrating the release of Street Fighter V. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audioboom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.